from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau. I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. The city of Nome has settled a lawsuit with a former police dispatcher after officers mishandled her sexual assault report. Attorneys for the dispatcher announced the settlement today. In March 2017, Clarice Bunn Hardy, an Inupiaq woman, reported to the Nome Police Department that she'd been sexually assaulted. Lawyers for Hardy say the Nome Police Department took more than a year to investigate her report. A year and a half after her report, her alleged assailant had not been charged. In 2020, Hardy sued the city of Nome and two police officials, alleging they mishandled her rape accusation. Today, Hardy says her case represents more people than herself.
I quickly realized I wasn't the only one Nome Police Department disregarded. Hundreds of other people were ignored, too.
The hundreds of cases she mentions were actually cold cases that were backlogged in the Nome Police Department, many of which were sexual assaults reported by Alaska Native women. The American Civil Liberties Union represented Hardy. As part of the settlement, the city of Nome paid Hardy $750,000 and issued an apology. In the settlement, city officials wrote, quote, "The NPD's failure to respond, as it should have, caused Ms. Hardy to suffer unnecessarily, and we are deeply sorry." Hardy thanked advocates, community members, and attorneys who brought attention to her case.
It's been a long, painful journey today, but I'm healing and trying to move forward.
Both the police officer who handled Hardy's case, as well as the department's chief at the time, have since resigned from the Nome Police Department. According to Hardy's attorneys, in the years since she filed suit against the city, the Nome Police Department has largely reduced its backlog of cold cases. The Alaska Supreme Court will decide in the next 2 weeks how much weight public testimony and the boundaries of Alaska Native regional corporations should be given in shaping legislative districts. The court heard arguments last week about these and other issues raised in appeals of a Superior Court judge's ruling on maps for the State House of Representatives and Senate. The redistricting board appealed whether Judge Thomas Matthews was wrong to reject the board's decision to pair most of Eagle River with the South Muldoon neighborhood in a Senate district. In public testimony, South Muldoon residents had asked to be paired with the North Muldoon House District and not Eagle River. Lawyer Holly Wells argued against the board's position. She says the board violated the Constitution by failing to take a hard look at public testimony. Chief Justice Daniel Winfrey questioned Wells.
So your meaning of taking a hard look at means that they have to agree with it?
Absolutely not. Okay. You don't have to.
What is there to suggest that they didn't at least hear it, that they didn't think about it?
Silence. There's silence to suggest that.
Another appeal was made by the city of Valdez. In its case, Matthews upheld a house district drawn by the board that included both Valdez and part of the Matanuska Sioux Sitna borough. Robin Brenna is the lawyer for Valdez. He says the city is too far away from Matsu.
If you go out of your door and drive for 100 miles, you ought to go past a few folks that you're district with. Call me old school.
Brenna also argued that the board gave too much weight to the regional corporation boundaries drawn under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, or ANCSA. Regional corporation Chilista supported the board's position in the appeal. Chilista lawyer Eva Gardner says the court should give weight to these boundaries. She says Alaska Natives have not been considered by the state government in the past. She pointed to the large state seal above the justices.
And sitting here today, listening to argument, I couldn't help but notice the seal on the wall behind you. And really, I encourage you to look at it and pay attention to what it doesn't include. There is no hint of Alaska's Native people in that seal. And that's not right. The Chilista parties ask today that your decision doesn't allow the redistricting process to similarly ignore and exclude the ANCSA region's importance to the state of Alaska and give fair representation to those regions and their people.
The court has until April 1st to issue a ruling. State biologists are looking into how a recent oil spill around 15 miles northwest of Sitka will affect the sack row herring fishery, which went on two-hour notice this morning. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game's annual preseason herring meeting on Monday night was punctuated by news of the spill, which occurred early that morning when a tugboat towing an Alaska Marine Lines barge ran aground in Neva Strait. In the collision, one of the tugboat's fuel tanks ruptured. The size of the oil spill remains unknown, but the boat has an overall fuel capacity of around 45,000 gallons, and the ruptured forward tank can hold up to 13,000 gallons. Sarah Morris, a spokesperson for the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, she said as of Monday evening, response teams were still working to remove fuel from the damaged fuel tank and had successfully patched all of the holes in the tugboat's hull.
One of the big to-do items for the next couple of days is to remove the tow line from the barge so that the barge can continue on to Sitka, and then they will continue to focus on recovering the tugboat that is grounded.
Sitka area management biologist Aaron Dupuis said Fish and Game would begin assessing the impact on the fishery this morning.
Nets will not go in the water until we have a good handle on where the diesel spill is. Nobody wants to get oiled nets or oiled fish or any of that. So in our aerial survey and with vessel surveys, we'll be able to know exactly where the sheen is, and the commercial fishery will not operate in areas that are impacted by this.
Fisheries biologist Troy Tydenko added that the state has a zero-tolerance policy for oil contamination and seafood, and they would not open an area for fishing if there was a risk of contamination. Dupuy said that as of Monday, the visible sheen had not extended into Olga Strait or into Krestoff Sound, where herring openers have occurred in the past. As long as the sheen remained limited to Neva Strait, Dupuy didn't anticipate it would impact the timing of the fishery. Kodiak's annual commercial fishing trade show, Comfish, kicks off in person and virtually this week. The event typically brings together a mix of vendors, fishermen, lawmakers, and scientists to discuss and celebrate the state of Alaska's fisheries. And one topic is top of mind at this year's conference, climate change. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports.
Comfish always includes a lineup of fishery forums, and there's one big takeaway from this year's schedule. Climate change is here, and it's affecting Alaska's fisheries.
For years now, we've been thinking about climate change as something that's coming in the future, something that's maybe coming somewhere else.
That's Mike Litso. He's the director of the Kodiak Lab for NOAA Fisheries and is presenting at this year's Comfish. He's also on KMXT's board of directors.
We're seeing temperatures in the Gulf and in the Bering that we couldn't get to in the pre-industrial world. And then we're seeing consequences of those temperatures.
He says researchers are increasingly able to link extreme weather events to human-caused climate change using what's called attribution science, which looks at whether climate change caused certain weather events to be more severe, and if so, by how much. He says events like the marine heat wave known as the Blob, which warmed the Gulf of Alaska back in 2014, is an example.
We saw the Pacific cod collapse in the Gulf. We've seen snow crab collapse in the Bering Sea. We've seen sockeye fisheries in the Gulf doing poorly. And all of those sort of with different strengths of evidence can be linked to these extreme temperatures that we know are human caused.
This year's Comfish panelists will lead over a dozen forums covering issues like harmful algal blooms and ocean acidification to the state of the Bering Sea crab population. 14 Alaskan fisheries were given federal disaster designations in January by the U.S. Department of Commerce, and that's likely to come up at this year's event, too. Alaska Fish and Game Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang says one of the reasons was a warming ocean.
For many years, we assumed the ocean was this unchanging variable out there. And I think we've now come to the understanding that the ocean's not as static as it once thought it was.
Vincent Lang will be one of the first presenters at this year's Comfish. He says the department has done a lot over the years to understand freshwater habitats, but ocean research is ongoing. Vessels from the U.S., Canada, and Russia are surveying the North Pacific in the largest ever study of salmon at sea. But Vincent Lang says that will take time.
We're starting to piece all these puzzle pieces together in the ocean, but unfortunately, answers take time to fully develop and emerge from that research.
So what does all this mean for fishermen? Marisha Shimkoviak is a research social scientist at NOAA and another Comfish presenter. Fishermen are on the front lines of climate change and are well aware that it's happening, according to Shimkoviak. But there needs to be better communication between scientists and fishing communities about just what happens next.
There is this sort of trench between scientists and the people who need that science to make decisions about their livelihood and their way of life.
Shimkoviak says there's a forward-looking part of that conversation, and despite the challenges presented by climate change, there's also opportunity, like investments in rebuilding working waterfronts and supporting newer industries like mariculture.
Fishermen are they're thinking about those things. You know, those aren't ideas that I am bringing forth to the communities. That's not really my role in those. They are the ones that are really kind of ready. You know, they have those ideas. And we need to have more of these conversations, really.
That conversation and others will have to wait until Thursday, when ComFish kicks off in the Kodiak Harbor Convention Center. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
All of this year's ComFish panels will be available to stream online. A full schedule is available at comfishak.com. And that is it for the KTOO News Update for Tuesday, March 22nd, 2022. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.